All right, I guess we could get started. I've had numerous people come and talk to me about I guess you would call it an assignment, on putting a budget together. You don't turn that into me, and I don't correct that. And I told last year's class not to tell any of this year's, that that's the case. How would I correct it? What it is, I think by the time you got done with it, I think some of you had to probably realize either you can't figure it out at all, or you have to make a lot more money than you think you're going to have to make a budget work, right? Is that what happened? You ended up with not enough money at the end of the paper? Okay. You ended up with zero. What did you start with? Zero. Yeah, there you go. Huh? Okay. All right. 16. So about 2000. What did you guys, who took, like a $40,000 a year salary? Anybody? Huh?
I did that.
How many were less than 40? Oh, okay. How many of you were more than 40? You probably, most of you in here, I would think down the road in our society, the way things go, you're going to be somewhere around that, $35,000 to $40,000 range, to start with anyway. And some of you will obviously have the opportunity to make a lot more than that. The key with doing that, sitting down and trying to figure out a budget is seeing that there's a lot of places that your money goes that you don't think about. And a lot of places, once you get out of here, and if, whether you're single in an apartment, or you're going to have expenses that you didn't think about. Once you get married, you have a lot more expenses than you ever thought about. They say two people can live cheaper than one. That's a lie. yes. For maybe the first year, you can probably do things because you're living off of some of the things that you already have between you, but that goes downhill real fast. So anyway, I wanted you to do that so you have an idea that, you have to do something. As he said, if you don't plan your money, what you do with your money's just going to go away. So you need to have a plan with it, and you need to, at this point in your life as a student, your plan is pretty short because you're here as a student, you're paying your school bill, you don't have a lot of other expenses because of that, and so you have a pretty much of a blindfold type situation with your eyes as you're looking, focused at a small thing. When you get out of here, whether you're single or not, things change quite a bit, unless you go home and live with your parents.
Amen.
Well, if you started with zero and ended with zero, you'll be living with your parents. Did anybody, we could take really the whole period to go through each one of these things or scenarios, and I really, I'm glad to do that with someone if you'd like to. I've already had one come in and talk to me about different things, and we went through some stuff. To do that in a class would just be, too hard to do. But I am certainly open and willing to talk to any of you about some of that stuff. I did it so you could start thinking about it. I should have probably told you to, write on. Of course, you have sheets in your book. I do have to apologize. I didn't look at them, because Ben redid that sheet, and the third sheet that's in there on the back of one of the other ones, he did it totally different, and so it doesn't look like it goes with it. So Don't worry about it. The two sheets that I handed out are the most important ones. So, for you to plan. The third sheet basically is on the back side of the basic cash flow plan sheet. It's in your book. I'm not sure if there's a page number on it. Huh? Yeah, on the back side of that one, that's actually a different type of print. So I found a few glitches this year since he changed some stuff for me that I have to go back and do. So anyway, so you weren't confused because you didn't have them in the first place. So don't worry about it. On the back of your practical proverb sheet, somewhere in there, there's another sheet that says FAQ, which is frequently asked questions. I thought we'd cover some of those today, unless you have some specific questions that you have for me, since we only have one class period left. Yes. I probably should clarify. We did spend some of it, but we spent it on things that were not going to be monthly expenses. In other words, we took some of my wife's income and spent it on some furniture. But most of it was put away so that we didn't count on it for regular monthly spending. That's what we did because we knew we had decided beforehand that she was going to be home with our children and therefore her income would not be there anymore. So we had to learn to live on my income, from that time. So that's, that's something that you need to consider. We bought some furniture. We bought some purchases that would be kind of like not necessarily one-time purchases, but purchases that will last a long time, so they weren't like any monthly expense stuff. And then once we got to just my salary, we didn't buy any of those things. So that clarify that. Any other questions of things that maybe you felt you wanted me to cover that I didn't cover? This class could go a lot longer than it is. I have to try to consolidate it to 1 hour a week. So hopefully I've given you a few things to think about anyway. If not, let's just go through these. Is credit score important? We kind of talked about this already. Is it? It is today. It probably didn't used to be as important as it is now, but pretty much everything that you do runs by your credit score. So the key is to not mess it up. Okay? You all probably hear, I don't know if you have, credit cards or whatever now, your credit score is probably not, in the higher end unless you've been charging some things. So you have to build it up. And like I said, one of the ways to build it up, anybody remember? Yeah, pay your bills. But get a credit card. Don't get if you get a credit card at the store, in other words, you can go get a credit card, you pay the money for it, and then you've got a credit card. That isn't going to build your credit score. Okay? A pre-paid credit card is not going to build your credit score, so that isn't going to help you. You have to get an actual credit card that you actually basically are asking the bank to loan you the money to buy the product, and then you pay them back, but you pay it back before you pay them any interest. That's the key. You pay your credit card, and just a little key, if you pay your credit card on the same day every month, that gives you an average of a 6% credit score increase. Why? I can't tell you. But that's the way the credit card companies look at it. If you're consistent and you pay that bill the same day every month, that's why mine is set up on an automatic payment. So every time that and I'm with my AAA gives me a free credit report So every time my payment goes in, my credit score goes up 1 point. And my last credit score was 827. So the average credit score for someone in America today is about 600. So, but if you're consistent in what you do, it does make a difference in your credit score. Okay? Yes. I mean, you can do it. It just depends on how many times you do it. You know, don't check it a lot. You know, because that's, I don't know, it sends some red flags that you're worried about something. if you check your credit score a lot. Now, I don't know why that is, but that's what, I've asked those questions, you know, of the bank and stuff. They said, well, it doesn't hurt to check your credit score, but don't check it a lot because that puts a red flag, so. But it's good to check it. For instance, this happened to a friend of mine. He was sent an application for a credit card in the mail. Well, he threw it away, but they automatically, because of his good credit, gave him a credit, card with that. Well, if you get a new credit card, it drops your credit score. Okay, so the more credit cards you have, the lower your score is. Even if you pay them, you still have a lower score because you have a lot more vulnerability of having credit out there. So your credit score goes down. That makes sense? Doesn't make sense. If you have one credit card and you have a limit, let's say of $5,000 on that credit card, and you're paying it every month, you're gonna have a good credit rating, a good credit score because of that. If you have two credit cards and they're both worth $5,000 and you might be paying them off every month, but your liability is $10,000. Because you have two credit cards that can go up to $5,000. You may not ever go there, but because you have that liability, your credit score is affected by that. So the more cards you have, and that's why there's a lot of people. I have a relative that has a Visa, a MasterCard, American Express, a Discover card. They have a gas card. They have three cards for different stores like Kohl's and Penny's, and they have all these credit cards. And they charge a little bit on all of them almost, you know, very regularly. They do pay their bill, but their credit score is lower than other people that have one or two credit cards that pay them off regularly because their liability of what they could do with those cards is out there. So does that help? So that's one thing you want to keep in mind. Yes. I have no idea. Well, I have two. I keep one at home that I don't even use. Just in case, well, this summer, somebody hacked my card. They charged some stuff on my card. Well, I had to cancel my card. Well, I was a week without that credit card, and I used the other one for that week. But I normally don't even use that other card. So that's the only reason I keep two, is, you know, in case something happens where you don't have one. So otherwise, you know, why do you think that all these, if you go, how many bought a plane ticket lately? In buying the plane ticket, did they offer you a credit card and so many miles off, you know, much money off your, why do they do that? Yeah, so that you can charge on their credit card because why? The average person in this country does not pay off their credit card bill monthly. It's like, the last I looked, it was 67% of the people that have credit cards do not pay their bill monthly. They're paying a monthly balance. Most of those credit cards, I think the cheapest one right now is Capital One's got one that they're, because they just send me, they get them all the time from them. They sent me one now. You can get this card and drop the amount you pay in interest to 13%. 13% today is a lot of money since they're only paying you a 0.5% on interest in a savings account. So that's supposed to be a good deal. So these people are paying that kind of money, you know, because they're not paying their credit cards off. Okay? Anything else on that? All right. Should I invest? I think at this point we're going to go past that a little bit because I don't know whether most of you are in that area. I think as you get down the road, you should look at investing. Again, if you like to do that kind of thing, go ahead and be a day trader. I don't want to do that. I hire somebody that does that for me through American Express Financial. And it's a Christian fellow that I know because I don't have time and I don't really want to mess with it. And so that's totally up to you if you like to do that kind of thing. But I do believe that, you know, down the road you need to have some kind of investment because you're not – by the time you guys – if we're around this long, by the time you guys get to be my age, there won't be any Social Security for you. I spent it all. then so we're going to skip the next one there. What percentage? That all depends on, you know, where you're at. You know, it's – you get the other things done first and in line, and then you can look at a percentage. If you're in debt, you guys aren't. Hopefully you won't get that. Hopefully after being in here, you're not going to go and put a lot of debt up. But if you are in debt, what do you pay off first? What? Okay. Look at the things that you have the highest interest on and pay those off first. Because that's what's costing you the most money. And it's usually going to be credit card debt. So don't get it in the first place, but if you get there and that happens, pay that off first. You guys like sitting in the dark back there? Oh, okay. I just. Huh? Actually, Caleb, would you go to my office and get my clipboard?
Yeah.
I got some stuff on there that I need to have for class. It should be someplace in there. All right. We didn't go through this, and I don't. Hopefully, all of you know how to do this. I know I've had some years where some people didn't know what to do. Does everybody know how to write a check? Okay, everybody knows how to write one. Okay. What I put some things that we don't cover, we won't get a chance to cover in the back where it says resources. That stuff that's for you to look at down the road. But it talks about some things in there about checks. What you should put on your checks. I was in the store the other day, and this lady had her life history on her check. She had her Social Security number on her check. She had her check. It was her home address, phone number, Social Security card. And I was talking to her. I told her I'm at Bible school and I teach a finance class. And I said, I was just curious why you put your Social Security number on your check. Well, I can never remember it. So if I look at my checkbook, I can always have it there. I said, do you realize that when you write a check that everybody in the world gets to see your Social Security number? Oh, I didn't think about that. But people do dumb things. Keep as little as possible on your check. Are you looking for something that I can't that you... yes, sir. No. Is there one in there? Okay. Checks. Okay. Yeah, so those are just under the practical suggestion stuff. Those are just some things that have to do with checks. If you put an account number, if you're sending a check to someone, don't put the full account number on the check. It's just the last four digits of if you're sending to pay something off, don't put that full account number on there. I would not put your cell phone number at all on a check or your landline. It's not a good practice because they can get a lot of stuff from that. You'll get a lot of calls from people because banks sell your information. That's another income source for them. They sell your information. And then balance your account monthly. What does that mean? Okay, you guys are smiling better. I can see it's dark back there, so I can see your teeth when you smile. Yeah. So, Jonathan, why do you balance your checkbook monthly? Okay, so you don't overdraw. What happens when you're doing a checkbook? Okay, Yeah, you don't know what's been cashed or what hasn't been cashed, but what normally happens sometime or another in your life, you're going to add or subtract wrong. Right? That never happens to anybody? Okay. It's happened to me where I've added wrong or subtracted wrong and that balance I have. The good thing is 2 months ago I added wrong and I ended up with $102 more than I thought I had. So that's good. But I can tell you this, I've had more of the negative amounts than when I've done it than I've had the positive amounts. You need to, go through it so that you have, exactly what you've got, because you will make mistakes. Will your bank ever make a mistake? Yeah, they will. And they're not going to call you and tell you. I can guarantee you, you have to call them. If they've made a mistake and you're watching your checkbook all the time, you're probably going to be the one to call them. And they will just say, oh, that was a clerical error. We'll get it taken care of. That's what they say. Well, clerical error could mean for them keeping your money for a period of time, making interest and making money off of your money. So they don't tell you until you, confront them. So that's why you go through and make sure your checkbook is balanced every month. Okay? All right. Going back to that sheet. What? Do I? I hardly write any checks anymore at all. Everything I do, U.S. Bank does all my checks free and they mail them out. So it saves me postage. It saves me, buying checks. I write an average of 2 checks a month right now. Now a lot goes out of my checking account, but I don't have to write the checks. It's automatic. And so as you get going, if your bank won't do that for free, find another bank. You need to shop for a bank just like you do for other things. Some banks do stuff and give you better deals on things better, than other banks do. Right now, U.S. Bank, if you're a student, you don't pay any fees with U.S. Bank for anything. So, there's different things like that. It's you're either one end of the spectrum or the other. You're either a young person, a student that they give you free goods, or you get old like me and they give you free stuff. If you're in the middle, they charge you lots. You want to look at that, because postage now is what, 50 cents? Yeah. So I think it's 8 checks a month that my bank sends out for free. That's what, $4 a month? Doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're on a tight missionary budget, $4 a month comes out to, quite a bit. And they do it for free, so I let them. So. When do I pay taxes? When do you pay your taxes? It's easier than it thinks. You pay them when they're due. Okay? That sounds like a really simple concept. You know that 42% of the people in this country don't pay their taxes on time? 42% of the people do not pay their taxes on time. What does that mean? It means for the government last year, the government made over $1.2 billion in late fees and extra taxes that were charged because they didn't pay them on time. $1 billion. Okay? Just pay them on time. You can avoid some problems. This question came up, and I can't remember the circumstances anymore. It's quite a few years ago. When is it practical or even profitable not to work? When you're dead. Why would that even be a question, do you think? Huh? That would be a reason, and that's why a lot of people are taking government subsidy. Right now, because of COVID, there's some people that are better off not working because they get more from the government than they can ever make at their job. Now, I'm not saying that's what you should do, but I'm saying that's what can happen. The reason this question actually came up is we talked about it earlier was there was a couple, then they were going to be in the ministry. And she wanted to know about her working. And she actually had a job at a bank. So we just went through, I think we went through this earlier, about how much it costs, for that second job. If you have to have another car, you've got those costs to figure, all that thing. So before you get that second job, or, this is for a couple, married couple, before that second job is there, you have to calculate how much it's actually going to cost you to do it. So when my wife worked at the bank, after, worked at Wausau Insurance, and then she worked at the bank after that, we figured out, because she had to have certain attire at the bank, and, you can't wear the same clothes every day, right? That's what she told me. So she had to have different outfits. We sat down and figured out, by the time we figured everything out, because she had to have a car, I had to have a car, so we had to have all this. Before that, we didn't have a car for her. Figured it all out. She was making approximately, that we actually got to keep, about $1.10 an hour by the time you add everything up. So you need to take time to look at all of that. Is it worth it to do that? You may be able to find something from home that you don't have all the other expenses with to do that would be more profitable than, going out and having a job that, she was getting, at that time, it was long years ago, she was getting $8 an hour. But with all the expenses we had for her to work, it didn't pay. And so she quit. And we found it was actually didn't hurt us a bit. So anyway, just you need to look at those things. That's where that question came from. How should those in ministry plan for future years? Obviously, some of you are going to be in ministry. What's a key that you have an option in ministry today? I think we talked about this. Sometimes I talk about things last year and don't think I talk about this year. But if you're going to be a pastor, what option do you have? You can opt out of Social Security. A pastor can opt out of Social Security. I think legally, if you read the paperwork for that, the only ones that really can do it legally are Catholic priests. I mean, the way it's worded, that's pretty much the only one that I think can do it legally. But technically, you can opt out of Social Security if you are a pastor. If you do that, what have you done? You've lost something at the end. How many churches, anybody know how many churches pay pastors retirement? Very few. We actually put, for our pastor here in LaGrange, we put $2,000 a year in account for his retirement. We don't pay him. It goes into an account for him. Very few churches do that. So if you opt out, my pastor in Wausau, he opted out of Social Security, never planned for it. He got to the age of retirement, he had absolutely nothing. He lived in a parsonage, so he didn't have a house. He had nothing saved because he spent what he had, and because he didn't get Social Security, he had nothing. We as a church ended up helping him out to an extent. The parsonage, we wanted to get rid of it anyway, so we gave it to him. And, but he did not plan for it. And I think, to me, as I've said before, I think that's presumption. I think, we can live by faith in Christ, but not presumption that he's just going to take care of us if we've done absolutely nothing. So if you do that, you've got to do something to compensate for it by putting something away. So since we aren't very good at that, my suggestion is if you're in ministry, don't opt out of Social Security. Keep it, and you'll have something at least. Maybe. What age can you start receiving money if you have an IRA? Everybody know what an IRA is? Huh? Yeah, well, what does IRA stand for? Individual Retirement Account. It's an account that you set up, that you manage. If you work for a company, a company may set up retirement for you, okay? But if you set up your own retirement, which you can do, It goes in, you don't pay taxes on it, you actually can deduct the money you put in an IRA each year. There's a difference between a Roth IRA and a regular IRA. Regular IRA, the Roth IRA, you can take money out of a Roth IRA without getting dinged. So like a regular IRA, if you take money out, it will cost you up to 12% of what you take out. So, and I'm not going to go into detail on that, but that's the difference between a Roth and a regular IRA. Also with the Roth IRA, when you put the money in, it's tax deductible. When you take the money out, you will pay taxes on it. With the Roth IRA, you don't get a deduction for it. So when you take money out of a Roth IRA, you don't have to pay taxes on it. Okay? So those are probably the major differences in those two things. Why does a business or a marriage succeed or fail? These are actual questions I've got, so that's why I put them in here. Let me ask that question. Why does a business or marriage succeed or fail? No. Yeah. I'm going to hope that would not work. Yes. Commitment? I think commitment is the biggest reason they do it. When they were thinking about this question, they were thinking in terms of probably finances and things like that. But the biggest reason that marriages and businesses fail is management. Now, so what do you say? Management in marriage? What's management in marriage? Management in a marriage is what Robbie just said. It's commitment to make it through the tough times. Management in a business is what? Okay, budgeting and not doing stupid stuff. Okay, that you could probably say that in a marriage too, not doing stupid stuff. You know. But managing it is making sure you know what's coming in, what's going out, and how it's happening. And too many companies don't watch that close enough. They have an owner, they have a manager that's not doing their job. Last year, 12% of the managers in corporate America were fired from their jobs for one of two reasons. Either they were down more than 10% in sales and stuff, and that's part of their job as a manager to make sure you don't go down. The other reason in that was they were stealing from the company. Those are the two reasons that managers get fired. Okay, we talked about this. What are the differences in savings accounts? A bank savings account, money market savings account, and a trust fund. We didn't talk about trust funds, but what's the difference between just a bank account and a money market account, which you can get at a bank? This is your final test, but no. No. What's the difference? Yeah. Okay, why? You're limited in your transactions on a money market account. But I just opened one up last week as I took money out of my savings account at U.S. Bank and opened up a money market account. It's not a huge difference in interest, I can tell you. But it was a 0.5% interest difference, which is not, I mean, it's better than a stick in the eye. But... Anyway, the difference between them, my bank account, I can take as little or as much out as I want anytime I want. A money market account, now I can only have 6 transactions a quarter, and those transactions have to be at least $500. So you can't take $20 out of your savings account for spending or something. You have to take $500 at least out, and you can only do that transaction no more than 6 times in a quarter, which for most people, that's probably enough. If you're really, you know, watching your money well enough, you can do that. So that's the difference between a regular bank account or a money market account. What's a trust fund? Anybody have a trust fund? Oh, sorry. You have a trust fund? You had one. Okay. When did it pay? Okay. Most trust funds are set up to be doled out when you're 18. and it would come from somebody that wanted to give you some money but didn't want you to have it as a youngster because they figured you couldn't, you know, be wise enough on how to spend it. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Savings bonds? Yeah. The savings bonds actually right now are not really a bad thing to have. They're actually paying more than a lot of other savings accounts. But you can't do anything. Once a savings bond is about as restricted as you can get, because once you get a savings bond, you can't take the money out for, I think it's 5 years. You can't touch it. But you get a little higher interest and, you know, it's kind of a secure thing. And that's why parents give it to their kids, because, hey, I just gave you $200, but you can't spend it for 5 years. So, yeah. Certificate of deposit. Because of money market accounts, CDs are getting less popular. I looked at a CD for to put my money in. It was a 0.1% difference between that and a money market account. And with a CD, you put money in and it has to stay there for the period of time you put it in. You can't touch it. If you do, they charge you 10% to take the money out if you take it out before you do it. So a CD is something that you got to make sure you're going to leave it in there for a long time. And right now the interest rates are not that much better than a money market. So I would not recommend putting money into a CD. Just to give you an idea, the town of LaGrange, I'm the council. We have a CD. We have $400,000 in that CD. Last month, our last quarter, with $400,000, our interest was $22. That's, yeah, woo-wee, yeah, that's a big deal. We're breaking it now because we have some money we have to spend. We get the money back from the federal government on the fire truck, but we have to pay the truck before we get the money. So we have to break the CD to get the money back. So we are paying a penalty because we're taking it out 6 months early. The penalty is going to be $30. So the interest we made has just been overspent. So anyway, so that those are things, you know, CDs right now are probably not a thing to really look at unless you want to put something someplace where you know you can't touch it and, you know, a safeguard for you, but that's, anyway, money market I think is better at this point. We talked about the differences in IRAs. How do you choose a bank? Closest one to get to, right? Yeah. Huh? Okay. I think a credit union is a good choice. Find the credit unions a lot of times are restricted, you know, for where you can get them. I am in the U.S. Postal Employees Credit Union because my dad was a mailman. Usually credit unions have better interest rates. If you have a loan with a credit union, the last year I had a loan with my credit union, they paid me back at the end of the year. I got 10% of my loan back because the credit union made money and it goes back to their members. So I got quite a good chunk of money back that they applied to my loan, which was kind of nice. So that's where credit unions are a little bit different than a bank. You probably don't have the fees, same structure. So if there's a credit union that you can get involved in, you probably will find that to be a little more economical. A lot of times, a lot of credit unions do not have all the services banks do. So you have to find out. Some of the smaller credit unions, for instance, you can't get some of the things that you can get out of a bank. But a lot of them are coming up to speed to do that, but there are still a few. So the key there is, just like you should do for anything, is shop around. Ask questions before you go into an institution. Right now, like I said, U.S. Bank, if you're a student, you can go in there, you can get checking, you can get everything with no fees. They even give you your first book of checks free. So just ask. You know, that's the key. Ask the questions. I don't know whether we talked about this or not, but does debt consolidation help you save money? Okay. I don't know. I don't, The only reason we went with U.S. Bank when we came out here is because we still had our home in Wisconsin. We still had some ties there. Our kids were there yet. And it was a bank that was there and a bank that was here. Now it doesn't really make much difference, you know, to us that we have there because we don't have the kids there anymore. We don't go back to, you know. So it is handy because I hate using ATMs. So it's handy to have a bank to go to. But if you're comfortable with ATMs and you're not getting dinged for using them, that's another thing you need to ask. Is there a charge for ATMs? Because some banks charge, some banks don't. But, you know, those are, I think that's kind of up to you. School goes with Pinnacle Bank. You have no need to have a bank any other place. Pinnacle is a little more of a local bank, and they've done a lot of things for us. Obviously, they couldn't this year because of COVID, but they've always come out every year to and cook a meal for us and things like that. You're not going to get that out of a U.S. bank. You know, they're a corporate situation. I think that's a personal preference.
Again, shop around, see what deals you have, see what's giving you a better deal on stuff. Yes. Okay, does desk consolidation really help?
You've probably seen commercials on TV if you're in over your head in credit card debt. You know, call this company and we'll help you get out. We'll lower your payments.
Does it help? Okay. Why doesn't it help? Okay.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it does. Sometimes it does. Most of the debt consolidation companies, what they will do is what you can do on your own. Okay? It's just people are too lazy to do it. If you've got a lot of credit, they're getting people that have a lot of credit card debt. If you have a lot of credit card debt and you're having trouble making your payments, you can call the credit card company and say, you know, I'm not going to be able to pay this. You know, can you help out? And most of the time, they will lower your interest rate most of the time if you ask the question. So these companies are just doing what you could do on your own if you took the time to do it. Hopefully you never get in that position where you've got so much credit card debt you have to call and do that. But what they do is they basically put pressure because they have their own people. They're putting pressure on the credit card company to lower these interest rates. And so then what they do is they consolidate all your loans, put them all into one. Well, when you consolidate anything and have one thing with less interest, you're going to pay less. You'll pay it off quicker. But what happens when you do that? Anybody want to guess? At over 70% of the time, this is what happens. There's, some people will benefit by that consolidation loans, okay? If they're very good with it. But what happens?
They're paying off that debt to get that loan down. Then they use their credit card and buy something else again. So they don't, if you're going to get debt consolidation loans, that's when you cut up your credit cards. Because you need to pay that off. But people don't do that. They just go ahead and, oh, I'm paying less now. I can go spend more. And that's what they do. And that's why debt consolidation is, they're not making any more money necessarily. They're doing, most of them are actually doing a good service. People just are dumb. And they say, oh, I'm paying less money now because I put it all together. Now I can spend more money on this card. And that's what 70% of people do that. They get debt consolidation loans and they put more money back on their credit card. So, and yes, they make money because they make a percentage because a lot of these credit card companies know that if they don't get something out of it, they're getting nothing. You know, so they want to make sure that they're getting something out of that person. And by the debt consolidation loan thing doing it, they get something out of it. So. Do credit cards give me free stuff? They all say they do. But do they all? No. Again, you need to shop around for a right credit card that works for you. The school, when they first had, they just had the Pinnacle Bank credit card, which, you know, that's our bank, so that's where we got a credit card from. We didn't get anything from that. I switched it over after I was here a short time to Capital One Spark Card.
business. It's a business account card. Everything we spend, we were paying, I think, $39 a year for the credit card from Pinnacle Bank. We pay the same $39 a year for the Spark card. Last year alone, the 1.5% rebate that we got back from Spark was well in excess of $5,000. So, if you're smart, yeah, the credit card can make you some money. My purchases are much less than that. I have a venture card because I'm not a business. A venture card, you can either get it in cash or miles for flights. And, I was over $1,500 in rebates last year. And so you need to be careful. You need to pay off your bill monthly. And if you do, you know, it can pay you some money. I pay $39 a year for it. But I benefit from that. So you can just, again, credit cards, you have to be disciplined to pay them off. If you are, they can be a good thing. They can work for you very well and you can use them to work for you. All right. There's a lot more in here and the resources, please, you know, take time to look through those. I'm going to give you your final today to take with. It's just like the other one. It's an open book test. So, as long as you took the notes, you ought to be able to do this just fine. And then just bring it to class next week is fine, or turn it in to me before class or whatever. Last year what I did, I'll just put it out there. I have a coin collection that I started when I was 8, when I had my paper route. And the other years, I've brought it in for people to look at. Are you guys interested in looking at? And I have a little quiz that you actually can make some money to see if you know what different money is worth. If you'd like to do that, it'd be more of a fun time to end our class time with. You want to do that next week, or you want to do that? Okay. Right. You can't have any of my collections, but you can look at it. But I started when I was 8. And the pennies that I got, the quarters, the nickels, were all on my paper route. And I started saving them, and so I have a pretty extensive collection. I have it in a toolbox now. I can barely lift the thing. So, all right, I'll bring that next week, and we'll have a little fun. And the last 2 years, one of the things that they said that I needed to have for my class to make it better was refreshments, so maybe I'll bring something next week. So, all right. Well, I hope that you have learned something and I've been able to give you something to work with. So here's the test.